This is Perry Marshall. I am with Joshua Boswell, and Joshua is a longtime friend and colleague, and he is a pretty well-known freelance copywriter and marketing strategist, also a guy with a big family and a beautiful wife, and lots and lots of different career experiences with almost every kind of industry you can imagine, from very large software companies to fundraising to solo entrepreneurs, training, coaching, and lots of strategy. And so Joshua was in the audience when we did the now legendary Star Principle Seminar with Richard Koch, and he and I are going to be talking about taking Richard's ideas to a higher level of implementation. So, Joshua, glad we're talking today.
Cool. Thanks for having me, Barry. Super appreciate it. And the Koch event was legendary. I think it was legendary while we were doing it. And if it's gone into, higher echelons now, then that's great.
So, Joshua, can you describe how this was different than, you've been to a lot of seminars.
Tons, yeah.
Was this like any other marketing seminar you ever went to?
No, very, very different. So, typical marketing seminar that you go to, you sit down. And, the most typical one is you sit down and, they string a long string of would-be or wannabe or just barely been marketing gurus. And they give you a little bit of content and then they pitch you whatever their latest thing is that they're trying to sell you. And the content, once had a really successful guy explain it to me. He said, the problem with most marketing gurus today is that, or online marketing gurus, he said, is that, a lot of these guys were tech people and the internet came along and they saw that they could figure out how to move traffic. And so they suddenly became, geniuses at marketing, and they really didn't know anything about real marketing principles. They just knew how to throw traffic on there. And so they got paid a bunch of money and they sold their systems to other guys. And really, so everyone's just kind of, like an incestuous pool of a bunch of guys teaching a bunch of stuff that just wasn't really founded in serious marketing tactics and principles.
Mm.
And, and you see that a lot. Like I get stuff all the time through email of, this new guru who's doing this thing, and his claim to fame is that he figured out how to sell marketing stuff to people who are, willing to listen. And that's really the extent of the businesses that they built. And that's shallow at the best. So, that's typical marketing events and stuff that you go to. This was, holy cow, radically different. First of all, you've got you, Perry Marshall, on the stage. Your claim to fame is not having sold a bunch of marketing systems and that's how you got wealthy. You have been down, you talked about me having done stuff with a number of companies. I think that your experience and breadth and depth of working with companies is way, way, way beyond what I've done. And so you've not only helped a bunch of companies build their stuff, but you've built a number of successful companies. So first of all, the founder was totally different. The second of all, now we've got Richard Koch on the stage. And here's a guy who's built, not just built businesses, but then for himself has built a phenomenal income. And lifestyle, like when he got up and started describing his lifestyle, it totally blew me away. Like, I don't remember the exact numbers. Like, I do basically a couple hours of work a day or a week, and then I've got all these systems in place that churn out money for me, and it's a great life. And I got homes in France and Portugal and, all over the place, and it's just amazing. So,
and it wasn't what some people might think. I mean, he didn't dwell on that at all.
No, not at all.
And it wasn't what you'd hear from marketers. This is a private equity investor.
Right.
Who's worth hundreds of millions of dollars.
Right.
And he's not, nor has ever been, in the business of, like, lifestyle business to attract groupies.
So I'm not sure I should say this, but I'm going to anyway. But here's the thing that I noticed. Like, he kind of seemed sort of uncomfortable. Like, Perry, you went, read all of his books, found him. We're like, holy freak, you have got to share this information that you've got, and drug him out to Chicago and started, you know, got him to start sharing all of this stuff with us. But he's not, he did not set out to be an internet marketing guru junkie or online bit, you know, like he wasn't there to create raving fans of people.
No.
He literally was like, here's how you build massive companies and create equity and create a lifestyle, you know, that's awesome. But it wasn't like a high bling bling lifestyle.
No, he was a little out of his comfort zone. And, you know, he wouldn't normally want to be in Chicago doing a seminar. And I don't think there will be another one. So, well, why don't you, you know, going beyond the surface level, can you describe how content-wise, I mean, some of the things that you took away that changed, like how did your perspective change?
Yeah.
Simply because you got exposed to that.
Yeah. So there are two major things that happened to me, and maybe I'll think of a third one. There's kind of a third one in the back of my head, but two that I can really specifically talk about. So the first one was when I walked into the door there, it was basically a solopreneur consultant guy. And while I had learned a lot about leveraging myself, I was still pulling a lot of levers. And the result of that was is this whole concept of equity and incremental growth versus, I guess what I'm going to call revolutionary growth, or moving into that star business category where you're both a cash cow, you're a leader in the business, you're doing amazing stuff. And I'll talk about that in just a second. But so that was where I walked into it at. The first thing that I pulled away from the whole experience was that as much as I thought I understood 80-20 and leveraging myself and utilizing systems and processes and, you know, having a big engine go on without me, I didn't understand that the way that I should have. And the more that I listened and the more that I absorbed, I thought, oh my gosh, like I'm way behind the eight ball on that particular point. The second, probably most important point for me was the whole point of equity. And, you know, instead of just finding a client, cashing out on that client, maximizing the client, doing really, really good at maximizing and upselling and cross-selling them and getting the most lifetime customer value out of them that I possibly could, I started seeing the world very, very different. Like, oh, man, how do I, instead of finding clients and building my business, how do I build businesses? How do I build equity? How do I build value that sticks around, not only for myself, but for others? And so, you know, we can get into however much of those specifics you want to get into, but those were the two major takeaways that I came out of the whole experience with, was like, man, I've got to change up how I see both my clients and my own business, and I got to change up the way that I see growth. So what I wanted to do is figure out, you know, the major change for me was figuring out how to build equity instead of just building businesses, and also stop having incremental growth and start having, again, that term that I use, revolutionary growth, or rolling into the star principle arena, right? So how do you create a star business, and then how do you create multiple star businesses, and then how do you create real wealth for yourself and for others, et cetera? And that, so for me, that's been the major shift in my business and my development, all the things that I've focused on since I went to the event.
What is different for you then as a result?
So the biggest differences are, A, how I approach stuff, but B, the results that I've got. So for an example, we could talk about a number of different opportunities that have come up, but one of the things that I've done is, instead of just, you know, having a business where I was focusing on little stuff, I built out equity positions on two different spots on the internet. One is in the personal development world, and one is in the copywriting / consulting world, where I'm helping other people grow. And the other one is seeing opportunities for what they really are. So as an example, had an opportunity to sit down with a guy that's a certified financial planner and has got a big financial planning firm, and started to realize, you know, looking at the star principles and things that are growing, started realizing that here was an industry that, so all of the major, in case you don't know the dynamics, I'll just talk about this for a second, all the major financial planners across the country are old. No offense, but they're older, right? There's not a lot of young blood there. In fact, somewhere in the neighborhood of like 60% of them are in the next 10 years, 5 years looking at retiring. So what you have is you have financial crisis going on in the world, need for more assets, asset insight allocation, like how are you actually, what do you do with all your money? And then the planners are all evaporating. So there's billions of dollars at stake and these companies needing to grow. And so I sat down and we said, okay, let's figure out how to create a system that creates equity, builds business for myself and for others. And so I'm now working with a team of financial planners and we're looking at creating systems and products and services for bringing on new clients, new customers, certifying, you know, this whole gambit of stuff that's going on there. But that is a substantially different business model that taps into a growing industry and positioning our company as a market leader in that area. That's a substantially different position than saying, hey, I'm going to be a consultant and just help some businesses grow. So, like, totally different.
You're not the only person who went to that seminar as a consultant and came out and said, hey, I could be getting a completely different kind of gig here.
Yeah.
With a completely different set of benefits. And actually, my benefits, if I choose the right client, where we're really going somewhere, my interests are actually more aligned with the owners than any of the other consultants that are probably talking to them.
Yes, absolutely. Because consultants tend to have, if they don't have equity in the company, they're on the other side of the table a lot of times. So if they don't have equity, and some consultants will get, you know, like a growth bonus perspective, but they're just getting a flat fee, then by nature of that relationship, it always feels like you're sort of like, I'm trying to propose to you the highest amount of work, you know, of pay possible for the least amount of work. And of course, they're on the other side of the table saying, we want you to do the most amount of work possible
sure.
for the least amount of pay. And when you deal with a client from this equity star business mindset and you come onto the same side of the table with them, now you're both growing a company that will create, you know, incredible rewards and returns for both of you and not just, you know, a consulting gig, right?
Yes.
Totally different. Feels so radically different.
How do you think about your time differently?
Yeah, so it's a curse is what it is, Perry. But it's a good curse. My time, literally every single activity that I do now, it always is in the framework of, will this activity help me grow equity and to put my companies and my position in a, and I'll use the word star position, or is this just activity? Am I just spinning my wheels or, you know, what's really going on here? And so the other thing that it's done is I look at my, and this is probably not exactly what you're looking for, but this is one of the impacts that it had on me. And that is so we have 11 children and family is a really, really big deal to me. And to me, family always has represented like, what is my dream lifestyle? What do I really want to have? What does my life really want to show up to look like? What are things that matter most to me? And I sit back and as I do business stuff now, every time I do something that I feel like is not optimized towards creating equity, to creating revolutionary growth, to creating star-based companies, I think, you know what, I am robbing time from my family. I'm robbing long-term equity. I'm robbing inheritance from them. And I never thought that way, ever. I never thought that way before. I just thought, oh, I'll allocate some time to family, I'll allocate some time to business and other stuff. But now I just think, you know what, if I am working from an ineffective, non-leveraged position, doing whatever it is that I'm about to sit down to do, that's worth $10 or $20 or $100 an hour to somebody, then I'm not getting any closer to doing what I really, really love to do. And so it's not cool. So I'm refocusing all the time.
I think you've expressed a certain level of dissatisfaction where you know what's possible, and you've raised your bar a lot.
Yep.
But you also know how much higher it can go.
Yeah, that was the other. So the first time I ever had my brain perspective blown out was, I don't know, about 15 years ago, I read a book by a guy named Mark Ford called Ready, Fire, Aim. And he's another successful guy that I like, worth a couple hundred million, great guy. And, you know, I'm reading this book, and he doesn't talk anything about these kinds of star principles. His business approach is totally different, but he's successful nonetheless. And he, you know, I'm reading this book, and I'm like, holy freak, like, I am living so far beneath my privileges. It's crazy. So that book kind of caused me to tweak a few things. But then, you know, walking into the challenge with that approach, and nothing against Mark, but it didn't give me, like, okay, here's systematic ways that I can create leverage, that I can create equity, that I can create, you know, maximize my time, that I can, you know, all those kinds of things. I didn't have the tools. Walking into the Star Principles seminar and getting involved with Richard and reading your 80-20 Sales and Marketing book, all those kind of things, they suddenly gave me a whole host of tools that allowed me to see, like, oh, you've raised the bar, but you're way, 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 way below what you could do. And so you need to, like, you know, shift that a little bit and move forward. So that there's a massive dissatisfaction. But I can say it's not like wallowing in misery. Right? It's like dissatisfaction with a strong sense of, holy cow, I'm dissatisfied, but I've got hope knowing that I can move forward and change it, right? Like, it stinks. It stinks watching, you know, if you're just have envy, if you're just watching a guy drive down the road in a Lamborghini or seeing a big house or, you know, seeing someone have all the time with their family or traveling around the world or doing whatever or having equity in a bunch of businesses, blah, 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 and thinking, I'm a loser. There's no way that I can ever get to that. That stinks. That's like, that's when you want to, like, find some, you know, it's like, well, where's some Xanax that I can, or Xanax that I can take to, like, numb myself up so I don't have to deal with this life anymore? See, the thing about what you're doing, Perry, is like when you're in that mode, you don't want to do anything. You don't want to grow. You feel like there's no reason to try anything because it's all going to fail and be, you know, for nothing anyway.
Yeah.
And I don't know how far you want me to go into the psychological rabbit hole, but holy cow, Perry, I have been there before, and it stinks.
Yeah, right.
It
just makes you feel helpless.
Yeah.
Right, totally. It kind of throws you into neutral.
Yeah.
Whereas our approach here is knowing that just as certain as gravity, there's a higher level of the 80-20 ladder, and it's probably right under your nose.
Yeah.
Now, that's probably a good transition to, would you agree that at the end of the seminar, it was like, okay, this is great, so now what?
Yes, because the seminar did two things with me emotionally. Like, first was, holy freak, Margie's my wife. Like, Margie, oh, you know, life is about to radically change for us. Okay, look, now we got this, we're doing this, we got to change this, And I tend to be a sort of, I'm kind of a wired up guy. I get excited about stuff. You know, I'm not, and Margie's so nice. She's like my calming agent. But, you know, we're like, in a couple of weeks afterwards, one of the things we did, this is a little Los Angeles, one of the things we did afterwards was, we walked out of there, and I had all these, like, my brain was on fire. We're going everywhere. And I said, okay, honey, we got to do it. So we came home, and we took an additional two-day retreat about a week and a half later, 2 weeks later, where Margie and I just went off, found a bed and breakfast, locked ourselves in a room for a couple of days, and just mapped out all, like, everything we were working on. And we refocused it through all the stuff that we had learned at the seminar, right? Like, okay. Mm. Does that qualify to be a star business? No, could it? How could we change it? Like, is that time being effective? No, scrap it. Start saying no to that. Does that qualify? Yes. Pour gas on it. So we set everything out, mapped it all out, looked at our stuff, and literally the last, what's it been, 18 months, 2 years? Where?
18, yeah.
Yeah, about 18 months. So literally since then, every decision that I've made has been defined on that. The challenge with that is, though, there's always a couple of challenges with that, and I feel this and I've faced it. The first challenge is, while the event gave a lot of tools and insights and resources, it doesn't, you know, you walk away, you start planning out all your stuff, and then there's, you got to have answers to questions that come up in the moment. Like, whoa, okay, this is looking a little different than what happened at the event. So now what? Like, do I take A or B? Do I move forward with this fork in the road? So yeah, you feel like, okay, like A, I want some more details. B, I want to like reach out to somebody, grab them by the lapels and go, look, I'm moving really fast here. Can you help me with this point? I just don't want to get stuck.
Yeah.
Like, how do I move forward? So in the interim, like any book that I can find available by Richard, I have bought and studied, and I dug more into your stuff and studied, but you know, still, there's nothing that replicates having someone put their arm around you that's been there and go, yeah, I know where you're at. I know the problem. You got to pull lever B that you didn't even see. And here it is. And, you know, oh, great. Thank you.
Mm.
I can keep moving forward.
So there were 3 days. The first day was getting off the hamster wheel. The second day was start principle.
Yep.
Third day was simplify. Now, of the three, which was the most mind-bending?
Oh, just for me personally, getting off the hamster wheel was cool, but I'd been chewing on that for a long, long time because I've always wanted to be rich and lazy and just hang out and spend time with my kids. So that was awesome. I know for a lot of people that came that were in traditional businesses, which I really wasn't, that was mind-bending. That was awesome. I got to say, simplify was for me the most powerful. And the reason is, again, because my whole purpose in life, really, honestly, to be frank, is like, how do I make more money working less so I can spend more time with family? Because,
mm-hmm.
man, my kids are growing up crazy fast. Like, I just, that's a major focus for me. So the whole concept of simplifying, reduce things down, make them less complicated and more efficient all at the same time is crazy. So like, you know, an example that I've heard you talk about a lot and that we talked about there was the whole, you know, Uber. Like, how do you get something so, you know, you don't have to deal with all the crazy stuff about taxis? And I don't want either of us to get on a rant about how we feel about traditional taxis.
Right. Right.
But the idea, like the idea was, hey, don't worry about it. All you do is you punch a little button on your phone and a guy in a decent car shows up and he's nice and he's rated well and, like, you get to your spot. You don't have to exchange any cash with the guy and it's over.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
right.
Simple.
Right.
Crazy. So for me, that was a major point. And one of the reasons why is because I have known for a long time that the number one self-sabotage method that we have. So as I watch people and I watch business owners and I watch individuals and marriages and families, like I see, like where is it that they almost always cut themselves off at the knees?
Hmm.
We all do. We all do it.
Yeah.
So the thing that I have seen is the number one mechanism for sabotage is complexity. Because when we're confused and we have complexity, then what it does is it forces us to freeze and start to analyze, right? And as soon as we are in that frozen mode and we're not moving forward. But when you simplify and there's clear direction, it radically changes everything. So that was a really, really exciting principle for me.
The simplify concept, first of all, I am pretty sure, I'm certain actually, that if somebody hasn't really heard Richard explain the simplify concept, they don't actually know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And this was actually a point where I received some criticism, you know, from different people, and simplifying was taken to mean really oversimplification or a belief that you can have a really simple business instead of a really complex business. I guess the interpretation was really simplistic. Like, for example, just if I was still just buying Google Ads and trying to sell PDF ebooks of the Definitive Guide to Google AdWords, I would not be around anymore. Right?
Nope.
Like, there's a lot of simple businesses that go belly up because they're too simple. It has nothing to do with what Richard was talking about at all.
Yeah.
What Richard was talking about is businesses that make the process vastly simpler for the customer or vastly less expensive through some kind of ingenious reconfiguration.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, like, if you look at Uber, now Uber is a really brilliant idea. But if you run Uber, you also know there's a lot of little devilish details that still have to be solved before they can successfully claim to have dominated the world.
Right.
Right?
Right.
They're in the thick of it, right? And we're not denying any of that, but what people are vague about is that there are certain aspects of the customer experience where when you cut the complexity by 50, 70, 90%, the business doesn't go times five. The business goes times 500.
Yeah.
And this is how wealth is created. And so, now, I've had a chance to have a ringside seat to what Richard's been doing for the last few years. Plus, I have my own history that goes back quite a bit further. The best example is FanDuel, right? I was there when, you know, Nigel and Leslie came to my seminar and they rode the train from Scotland, and they were no different than any other little tiny software company who was trying to do something sort of interesting on the web and, you know, kind of juggling between lawyers and programmers and project management software and whatever else, right? But now they're a billion-dollar company, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, then Richard takes a piece of them. Well, you know, Richard's got a lot of these things, and many of these companies fit the Simplify model. They all fit the STAR model.
Yeah.
But then you add the Simplify layer. And, you know, I would have loved to have added something onto the end of the seminar and said, well, this is the program that follows up. Well, we just didn't have that.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what happens when you're doing, well, you're walking on the edge of the airplane wing. I mean, that's really kind of what we were doing. And we're innovating as fast as we can. But what we eventually realized was, all right, so Richard's got anywhere from 50 to 70% success rate in picking winners, whereas most venture capital firms are sitting at 10%.
Right.
So we got literally a five times better success rate than most VCs. And what Richard and I kept talking about, and this is lots of conversations over well over a year, is Richard says, you know, we know how to engineer a company to be a simplifier instead of just waiting for one to come along.
Right.
Now, Richard himself, he's happy to just wait for him to come along because he's got people that come to him with deals every day.
Right.
But I'm sitting there and going, you know, I think I could have a lot more FanDuels and a lot more Infusionsofts and a lot more of these. Maybe they get to 25 million. Maybe they get to 50. Maybe they get to 200 million. Maybe they get to a billion. But companies that go a lot further than the glorified one-man band that's just sitting at $1 or $2 million, you know, I can think of one right now, for example, and they're a glorified one-man band. They were a glorified one-man band when they were at $1.5 million, but now they're somewhere between $3 and $4 million, and they are definitely beyond glorified one-man band. And I think they will eventually get sold for $30 to $50 million.
Hmm.
Well, I know that guy. I know how ordinary he is. I know how he puts his pants on one leg at a time.
Right.
Right? I know the stuff he feels guilty about. He's no different. And I think there are a lot of people who, with a few significant adjustments in their product or service offering and a serious commitment to a couple of key priorities in how they develop their product, they can 20X their revenue.
Yeah. Yeah. The reason that I totally concur with you on that is because, so the idea that, you know, oversimplifying is a silly thing. Well, we're not oversimplifying the systems on the back end. It's like a car, right? You sit down in your car, and some genius got to the point where, look, you have a little fob, or now I see Volvo is going to just your phone. Okay. So you have a fob, you sit down in your car, you push a button, and how many thousands of complex, cool systems fire up to give you ultimate leverage? And you can drive around and do whatever you want. Well, the challenge is that, and I, you may disagree with this, but I, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but sometimes we get super brilliant people in this world of ours that are unconsciously competent. In other words, they do phenomenal stuff. They just don't know exactly how they do it. Or if they do know how to do it, they can't exactly map it out to teach it so that somebody else could replicate it, right? Well, so without sounding like, or trying not to sound like a brown noser, one of your gifts, Perry, in my opinion, is that you understand stuff well enough that you can take concepts from the unconsciously competent people and hand it over into replicatable systems for people who want to be consciously competent and actually, you know, not just naturally fall into this, but like systematically, methodically put the complexities into place so that the end user has a simple key fob that he can turn his car on with, right? So I don't know if you've recognized that about, I don't know if you recognized that about yourself before, but like that is my perspective of you. I think you took this crazy complex AdWords system in the beginning and said, okay, people, like I cracked the code, but not only did I crack the code, I consciously did it and I systematically did it. And now I'm going to teach you how to follow a roadmap so that you can do the same.
Well, that's exactly what we're now doing with Simplify. So the Simplify concept in a oversimplified nutshell is either you simplify something the way that an iPad simplifies a Windows PC,
mm-hmm.
which is 80% of what people want to do, but only 20% is complicated.
Right.
Right? Or you dramatically simplify the way to produce something so that the price drops dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
And the Model T was about, it wasn't 80% cheaper, but it was about 60 or 70% cheaper than what was going on with cars at the time, and it was better. And because, so when they dropped the price from $1,600 down to $360 in 5 years, demand went up 700x.
Right.
And notice that Ford is still on the top of the heap 100 years later, right?
Yep.
Now, it's not very difficult to explain the basic concept, although most people have never thought about it in this particular profound way, that almost all disruptors are either the Apple type of simplifier or they're the Ford type of simplifier. Well, what I found as I dug into it is there are really a lot of nuances to this. Like, you can almost write it down on a 3x5 card, but that doesn't mean that you know how to get there from here. And there's another problem, which is it's really hard for people to see how to do this from the inside looking out.
Yeah.
It's really hard. You almost, by definition, need somebody on the outside to come in. And so what we committed to doing was building, I don't know what you want to call it, the Rube Goldberg machine, the Rubik's Cube, the master strategy for what are all the different questions you ask, what are all the different ways you twist the Rubik's Cube, and identify, all right, so what disruptive level of customer experience do we create with validated market research and metrics and knowing that the demand, the latent demand is out there for this?
Right.
To where, you figure out how to drop the price of that particular kind of a thing by, you know, 60 or 70%, not by shaving pennies, but by rethinking the whole thing. Or how do you take the customer from 117 steps down to 35, and all of a sudden it is so clearly superior that you would never want to go back to the old way of doing it.
Right.
And when you're the company that does that, and you're the first to get there, you have an overwhelmingly good chance of not only crushing your competitors, but even creating a market that didn't exist before. So, for example, anybody who's paying attention knows that Uber is killing the taxis.
Yeah.
And I don't have any sympathy for them.
Nope.
But Uber is already 5 times bigger in San Francisco than the cab industry ever was in San Francisco.
Right. So they didn't just crush the cab industry. They really created a new industry.
Yes. And I saw this for what it was. I had only ridden Uber once or twice, and I had at least caught on to kind of how easy it was, and I liked it. I wasn't totally sold on it. I was still scratching my head a little bit. But then my daughter left her book bag at home, and my wife goes, "Oh, man, 50 minutes out of my day just to go 25 minutes there, 25 minutes back." I said, "Hey, I wonder if an Uber driver would take that thing." And he did. And he dropped it off at the principal's office. And I'm like, ooh, I am now using this in a way that I wouldn't. The thought of asking a taxi driver to take my daughter's backpack would never occur to me because I don't even trust taxi drivers enough to ask them to do it.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
Now, this is the signature of a great simplifier, is it creates markets that did not exist before, and that's where the exponential growth is. And so what we decided that we're going to do is we're going to take people through a process, and we're going to figure out where are those invisible markets and what are the options, and then go back to the client and say, here's what you can do. And if Richard is interested in your business, which I can't guarantee he is, you know, and if we feel there's a match, I think we can walk you through this process over the next 12 months and we can get you pointed in the right direction. And if you're not at a place where you could pull this off, then we'll figure out what's the remedial path. Now, I had a conversation just the other day with a guy. He's got probably $1.5 million business. It's a good business. It's profitable. It's growing. It's in a growing niche. He's making a good income, and he likes what he does. And we had an initial simplify. It was a pre-consultation. It wasn't even a full consultation. But we talked about, I asked him a bunch of questions that he had never thought of before, which is really the value of this.
Right.
And because I was asking the question, what do marketers do? Marketers go mostly, well, if I adjust the USP and if I get the Facebook advertising and if I write good copy and do everything else, you know, how can I like double or triple this thing? Mm-hmm. And that's great. That is not what we are doing. I am asking the question, how do we 30 to 100x this thing? How do I get them to $40 or $120 million? Well, you can only do that by reinventing something. So what do we reinvent? And we had this conversation about what could you reinvent, what needs to be reinvented. Now, he'd never thought much about it. He'd thought about it some. So we crystallized this conversation, and we identified a few things we could do, and I said, so, do you want to build a disruptive company, or do you like what you're doing? He's deciding.
Hmm.
But the nice thing is we're giving people the ability to decide.
Yeah.
Now, if we do an initial evaluation, we could end up finding, well, you could completely revolutionize your business. It would also probably cost you a couple $1 million to do it, and you might like. I'm just giving you for instances, right? I mean, I don't know.
Sure.
But we take the person of actually getting to decide. Do I want to own a $10 million or a $50 million company? Do I want to stay where I'm at? This will also alert you to where you're vulnerable.
Hmm.
Where are most of us vulnerable? We're vulnerable not to the direct competitor, which often we obsess about, you know, because we're in this little dogfight with them, right?
Right.
You got that project, dang, you know, we were bidding on that for months and we lost it. It's the thing that blindsides you. In the 21st century, that's That's the thing you got to watch out for.
Yeah.
And how many taxi drivers could have come up with Uber? And they're even programmers or whatever. Like, they totally right. could have done this. But they didn't. The guy that founded Uber didn't have anything to do with the transportation business at all. And that's what you got to watch out for. And so, in fact, I told Richard when he was talking about writing a Simplify, but well, he was in the middle of it, and it's not out yet, but I told him, you know, the title of your book should be Simplify. If you don't, they will.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't use the if you don't, they will subtitle because he's British and he's too polite to say that. But it's true.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I want the people that are listening to this conversation we're having to be thinking about, well, first of all, how do you know you couldn't be 10 times bigger than you are? How do you know you couldn't? I know what it's like to wake up in the morning and go deal with all the chaos. Like, I get that. I totally get that.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that for all that pain and suffering, you couldn't end up with 10 times more than you have. I mean, if you start meeting people who run $100 million, billion-dollar companies, you quickly figure out it's not like they're special.
Yeah.
Or Joshua, am I right?
Well, I've got a guy in my mind that owns 23 companies and has about $4 billion of assets under his control and super great guy. And weird, we're very good friends with him. We spent a day at his house, we spent the night over there at his place and spent a day with him. And gosh, the guy like is just like me. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, that's true, right? And so, I know about your head trash, but it's possible. Or maybe it's not possible, but at least we'll find out.
Yeah. Well, to me, saying, you know, is it possible? Well, yeah, it's possible. I think that with the right system and with the right mindset, you know, anybody listening to this call literally could figure out, with the right process, could simplify, expand their business, create 10, 20, 40, $50 million companies, et cetera, et cetera. You know, but not all of them will do that for a lot of different reasons. And, you know, maybe it's just too much work to shift markets or whatever. But is it possible? Yeah, it's definitely possible. And I think that where most people get hung up is that they get up, they look in the mirror, and they go, I don't know. And they just don't see themselves in that light. And I think, in my personal opinion, Barry, I don't know if you might feel a difference, but here's what I've experienced. I think the reason they don't see themselves in that light is because they don't have a clear path to get there. You know, it goes back to that seeing the mansion and the Lamborghini or the whatever and going, you know, ah, crud, I could never do that because they don't know how. Well, if you showed them that they could, you know, pull this lever, flip this switch, implement these systems, and then they could do it, that changes everything. If you remember some of my past history, it's that moment in time when I was several hundred thousand dollars in personal debt, no business.
Yeah.
Like six kids freaking out, like, what am I going to do? On the verge of nervous breakdown and suddenly being handed a system of copywriting and consulting and a roadmap and all of a sudden going, oh, wait a minute. Like, life doesn't suck that bad. Like, I can do that. Right?
Yeah.
And that experience of getting a clear path is what revolutionarily changed where I'm at. I had the exact same experience when, you know, my experience with you and coming across all of your stuff was that same aha moment. Like, I thought I had hit this ceiling of where I was at in terms of income and lifestyle, and all of a sudden I was like, oh, wait a minute. There's this really clear path that moves me forward. So, okay, let's take that path and let's change everything. So I think that a lot of people, yeah, we have head trash and we got psychology, but I think that a lot of people, they stand on the verge of massive opportunity and kind of tremble because they don't have a roadmap to move forward. Well, let's give them a roadmap and then let them decide if they want to stay trembling or if they want to just step forward.
Yeah, I think there's two kinds of people that should be talking to us. And one kind is the guy that you just described where, hey, I've got a business, I'm making money, it's working, it's got its headaches, but it's off the ground, we're not steering a parked car, but can this really get bigger? You know, is there just the ceiling and this is as good as it can get, or could this be a lot more successful, or could we maybe even just groom it to be a lot more successful? If I made a decisive change in direction today, then could it be the 18 months to 24 months from now I would be really ready to move into a bigger league?
Right.
Okay, but that's the one guy.
Yep.
Now, then there's the other guy, and I just talked to one of them today. And that guy is pretty sure that there's a whole bigger world out there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the guy I'm thinking of, his business has grown, I don't know, 600% in the last 4 or 5 years. And he is occupying territory that some very big companies have managed to not take advantage of. I'll give you an analogous situation. Sony, do you remember a thing called the Sony Mini Disc? Did that ring any bells?
Yeah.
And it was this cute little kind of little disc drive thing, and it was smaller than a CD, and you could record on it and stuff. And I bought one of those things because I thought you could plug maybe a USB cable into that thing and download, like, I could record this interview with you, Joshua, and then it would be in my computer. Again, we're talking like 15 years ago. And guess what? No. Why? Because another division of Sony was Sony Music, and they didn't want anybody copying music. Sony could have been the iPod.
Yeah.
But they didn't, because they had these corporate fiefdom things going on. This is the exact problem of why this guy has an opportunity that some really big companies have not taken advantage of. We talked about that this morning. Now, what our conversation is focusing on is, okay, so what do you need to do to make your fortress impenetrable before they've really noticed that you've done this? And now, like, they couldn't. Remember when Google Plus tried to be Facebook?
Yeah.
Yeah, that flopped like a lead balloon. Too late.
They're trying it again, round 20. So, yeah, too late.
Too late, okay? The conversation that we're going to be having as we go forward with our consulting engagement with them is, how do we make you like Facebook was when Google woke up and said, hey, wait a minute, they've just got something really valuable and we missed the boat on this. And when that happens, it's too late, right? And if life had gone a little bit differently, Google would have bought Facebook. But as it is, Zuck is doing okay.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
That's what we're talking about. And it doesn't have to be on a billion-dollar scale, but it could be tens of millions. It could be very significant. And you could create a situation where if somebody wants you, they have to pay a hefty price tag for you. And that gives you a level of options and a level of status in the world that is extremely rare. And we have a roadmap to get there. Just like years ago, you had a roadmap to become a copywriter and get your way out of your mess, right, Joshua?
Yep.
You know, and then later you had an 80-20 copywriter, an 80-20 formula and a roadmap to get yourself to an even higher level, right? And then you came to Star Principle, and now you had an equity formula. And I also want to mention that a lot of the people that are coming to us through consultants. And the consultants come to us and they go, I got this client, and I really like what you're doing, but like, could I introduce you? And the implicit thing in that is, and like, you're not going to screw me over, right?
Right.
You know, you're going to please respect what I'm doing here. I really see some opportunity here. And so that's another potential ingredient. And, you know, if that's you, we do compensate you for helping us out, and we respect what you're doing. And, you know, there's a lot of, as they say in the old school world, acres of diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, companies that have a lot more potential than what's getting exploited, and it's really hard to see it from the inside. Am I missing something really big here? And if your gut tells you that you might be, then you should talk to us. So you can go to simplify.fm, and we have a contact form. You know, if you're one of those people, we'd like to talk to you. How high is up?
And I think that that, Perry, is a major point on the whole discussion, and that is, A, how high is up, and where do you want to go? And the thing, you mentioned something a little bit earlier that I think is really critical, and that is, you know, you said you're waking up every day, you're dealing with your businesses, you're thick in the middle of it, you're putting forth all this effort. So, you know, key to the whole 80-20 and now the simplified conversation is, look, 24 hours is going to go by anyway. You're already doing something.
Yeah.
So are you using, you know, the analogy of the lever, are you using a little one-foot stick to try to lift a 500-pound block? Are you using a simple machine to get it up? Like how, if you're going to do the effort anyway, how much output is that effort going to produce?
Yes.
So, you know, and if somebody's like me where they want to run a really successful business, but they don't want it to consume every aspect of their life, then that question is first, that's paramount. Like, how, if I'm going to do effort, then what is the output?
Right.
And so I guess my encouragement to anyone listening to this is if you're in one of these categories Prairie's talked about, so you're, you know, you have a sense that there's something else out there, but you don't know the roadmap like I was, or you know there's something else out there, it's just you're so right in the middle of it, you got to have some external eyeballs and external eyeballs to look at it, and then a system to implement what you see, what you find, and to make it grow. Or if you're just like, we're right in major territory that we should be able to dominate, we want to build the fortress, but not quite sure how, then I think all of those, if you're in any of those categories and you're listening to this, then I think it's a no-brainer. I think it's a very simple thing to go to this simplify.fm and say, okay, I'm in one of those categories. I think I'm a candidate, but let's find out. Let's see what my choices are. Let's see how far this could go, and let's begin the process.
Yes.
So my encouragement is, if you're in those categories, to absolutely to take advantage of it. You know, here's the other thing. Perry, you and Richard are a proven entity. So the fact that this is possible is, you know, some people might go, I don't know. The fact that you're saying that it's possible and have validated it so many times already and Richard has validated it so many times makes it not a question of, I don't know. It makes it a question of, is it right for me, right? And is this what I want to do moving forward? So,
well, is it possible? And again, our initial engagement, which is really just an evaluation process, is just asking the question, is it possible or not? And if we don't think it's possible, we'll tell you. We're not going to string you along. You know, the thing about Richard is he just won't touch anything that doesn't have a lot of potential.
Right.
You know, and like we know that quite a few people who go through our initial screening process are really just going to end up doing some more consulting work with our company to just get in a position where, you know, a guy worth $300 million would think that what they're doing is interesting. Well, there's a lot of value in that. It's kind of like, Joshua, when we did the Content Czar contest, which you won.
Yeah.
Several years ago, I was bringing on some new team members, and we charged $25 application fee for a person who would eventually become a 1099 contractor with us and do a significant amount of work for us. And there was this guy, the very first blog comment was, "What a ripoff! I would never pay $25 for a job application."
Yeah.
Okay. And the next guy that commented said, "Dude, I'd pay these guys a lot more money than that to tell me why they don't want to hire me."
Yep.
Right? And it was the difference between the scarcity guy, who, by the way, was not a paying customer. He was just a freeloader.
Yeah.
And I'm fine having freeloaders as long as they're free, you know, like, but he was just griping. And the other guy was like, "Hey, I'll pay $25 for some criticism." Well, you know, our onboarding process is a lot more than $25, but in the grand scheme of things, you know, if you're running a multi-million dollar company, it's effectively like spending $25 is for a regular guy who's looking for a job. Like, well, are we up to snuff? And where are we weak? And where are we vulnerable? What are our strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats? From this perspective, not just growing like 2x, from the perspective of growing 20x.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited about this. I've been planning this and dreaming and scheming for a long time. It's now a reality, and I think we're going to change the business culture with this. I think there's going to be a whole set of language and ideas that create 10, 100 billion dollar companies that don't exist right now. And I can't wait to see it happen.
Awesome.
Well, Joshua, thanks for this conversation. I appreciate your time, and you're a great interview. You and I always have great conversations, so I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I totally appreciate it. So, you know, for me, it's always, sure, I get to tell a few things, but then I get to listen to you, and then truth be told, I've got about 2 pages of notes on some of the stuff you said. Why? Because you're a brilliant guy. You explain things in a super easy way. So thanks for this. Thanks for allowing me to be here. It's been cool.
Well, thank you, Joshua. And, you know, for people that, if this has been stimulating to you, go to simplify.fm and we'll go to the next step together.
Sounds good.
And Perry, I just, one more thought comes to my mind. This is, you know, as a consultant, you'd mentioned that a bunch of consultants come on and might be interested in this. And I think that this onboarding process should be like second nature. I mean, this makes sense. For example, when my onboarding process when I have a new client is exact same process. We sit down and I ask them a handful of very basic questions, and then we go through a whole set of discovery insights and conversations with them. And that whole process, the two things come out of that. Normally I charge, depending on who it is and what we're doing, so like, that's like a $5,000 or $10,000 process to get them into my world. And what do they get from that? Well, what they get from that is my analysis of where they're at, what their systems are doing, how we can maximize stuff, how we can get better returns, how we can pull a couple of levers and create exponential growth. And oftentimes they're not a great fit for what I do. But at the end of it, they have this roadmap of what they need to do to solve their challenges, and I give them this information, you know, and I don't know how extensive your feedback is going to be, but I know engaging in the process is going to be like that. So the value that comes of it, I know one company that I did some consulting with is a simple example. They were not a great fit for me. They were in the dating and international dating and mail order, Brian, for lack of a better term, industry. They were great people, cool business. They were honest and above board, which is unusual for that industry.
Yeah.
But after the process, like, I handed them a roadmap, and now they've created tons of growth using that roadmap, even though for a number of reasons it wasn't the best fit. They needed to come up to a different level to be a good fit for me. But it was a great experience. So I think what you're doing here is awesome. And I think that as people go simplify.fm and they explore the possibilities, I think that the value they'll get out of it, regardless of whether or not they get on board, is going to be awesome. I know for sure it will be. So anyway, that analogy popped in my head. I thought we could share that with you. But I think that it's a very, very important part of the puzzle. And I think it's super valuable for them moving forward. So
great minds think alike.
Yep. Cool, Perry. Thanks again for this time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Joshua. Take care.
All right. You bet. Bye.